This episode is brought to you by Groove Washer, the best record cleaners and protective sleeves for your vinyl collection. Ask for the Groove Washer from your local shop or go to groovewasher.com. Discount code VinylGuide10. And now, on with the show. Welcome to The Vinyl Guide, the podcast for record collectors and music nerds. Here's your host, the biggest record nerd of them all, Nate Goyer.
Hey, well, hey everyone, it's Nate. Welcome to episode 433 of The Vinyl Guide. And look, I'm not going to faff about today. I'm going to get right down to it. We have an absolute legend of music on today's show, Mr. John Densmore of The Doors. And he and I talk Doors history. He shares Jim Morrison stories. We talk about the complications that arose after Jim's death, the issues of commercialism in music, and John's battles to keep the music of the Doors from being sold off to advertisers. So, as most of you know, today so many artists are selling off their music catalogs, including the likes of like Bob Dylan, Fleetwood Mac, even Devo, The Killers, bunch of bands. And believe me, there's no judgment on artists who choose to do that. They all have their reasons. You know, maybe they want to simplify things rather than leave their heirs a mess of music rights to deal with. However, several years ago, John was faced with former bandmates who wanted to start making their music available for commercials, and he fought quite publicly to stick with the original Doors agreement that the band made while Jim was alive. Well, of course, John had to use the courts to kind of prove his case. This ultimately resulted in a way for the Doors to honor the art of the band that they created together and not have the songs used to sell pharmaceuticals or breakfast cereals. It's all in his book, The Doors Unhinged. I encourage you to pick up a copy, read about it yourself. It's a really good read and John explains it very well. Now, in full discretion, I'm more on the starving artist side of the entertainment continuum. I do have sponsors for this podcast, Groove Washer and VMG Vinyl, who are lovely people running small businesses that make excellent products. I also have a Patreon page where listeners can help support the show and get some extras, and I've even got an extended version of my interview with John available to show patrons at patreon.com/vinylguide. If you want more and you could help support the show, go there now, patreon.com/vinylguide, where you can get commercial-free episodes, high-resolution audio, and extended interviews like the one we had today with Mr. John Densmore. And by the way, if you like our conversation today, I encourage you to follow the Vinyl Guide podcast in your podcast app. We have over 400 other episodes and interviews with the likes of Eddie Kramer, producer of Jimi Hendrix and Led Zeppelin, episode 429. We also spoke with Jason Bonham about his father and playing with Led Zeppelin, episode 383. Episode 377, we spoke to Janie Hendrix, Jimmy's sister, on the Experience Hendrix Company, as well as managing her brother's legacy. That's episode 377. Patty Boyd, who was once married to both George Harrison and Eric Clapton. She tells her story, episode 370. And of course, episode 317 with Bruce Botnick on the recording of L.A. Woman and the tapes of The Doors. That's episode 317 of the Vinyl Guide podcast. So with that, let's get into our conversation with Mr. John Densmore of The Doors.
Hello.
Mr. Densmore.
And your name is?
Nate.
Hi, Nate. I'm just going to call you Mr. Blue Hair.
You could do that if you want. Yeah. I went gray very early, so I had a choice. I could either look like an old man or I could look like a crazy old man. And so I picked the crazy.
Yeah, well, I'm white now, practically.
Yeah. So, John, been going through the new reissued book, The Doors Unhinged.
Yeah.
And just for the audience who may not be familiar with it, Unhinged tells the story of John's fight to keep the legacy, spirit, and music of the band as far out of reach of the greed gene as possible. Is that a fair summary?
Yeah. I don't want to break on through to a new deodorant.
The Doors are one of the very few bands who's been able to resist that. And I think as a consequence, the legacy and the reputation of the band continues to grow in a positive direction.
Hey, and I do write in this book, if you're a new band trying to pay the rent, do it. I get it. Mm-hmm. But, you know, you might, if you get a hold of the brass ring, you might reconsider that decision. In our case, the main deal is that Jim was so adamant against, come on, Buick, light my fire. And he didn't write it. Robbie primarily penned that. Wow. What does that say about the entire catalog, Blue Hair? That he cares about the whole thing. He you know?
It's and sacrosanct. He, yeah.
He's my ancestor now, and I'm trying to honor that. And I don't know. So.
Mm-hmm. Well, your autobiography, Riders on the Storm, it opens with you visiting Jim's grave several years after he passed.
Correct.
Now, was his grave the gathering place that it's become in the last several decades?
Oh, yeah.
Even then, that was 74, 75, right?
Yeah, and I think it got overwhelmed with graffiti, like Jim Morrison this way. And they took it off, and they were going to somehow not let anybody in there or move him, but they didn't. So, I mean, he's hanging out with Mozart and Edith Piaf. I mean, what can I say? Good company. Yeah, the after party might be really good, you know?
Yeah. Well, I'm not in a rush to get there.
No.
So immediately after Jim's passing, was there a funeral of any sorts?
Nope. First of all, there was rumors of McCartney dying, and we thought, well, I don't know, and told the manager to go over on the weekend to Paris and check it out. And then then we get the message, yeah, Jim's died and we buried him. Whoa, that was quick.
You said McCartney.
I said that because there were rumors of...
Oh, the rumor, the Paul is dead.
Paul is dead, and so we sort of thought, yeah, well,
okay,
you go over and let us know. And he let us know it was true, and he buried him. Whoa, holy shit. Pam wanted it quick. What can I say?
Right.
I don't like the Jim's not... And Jim's I understand the Jim's still alive rumors because we all loved his artistry. I also witnessed him turning into an alcoholic. So that was sobering. And I'm pretty sure he's 6 feet under. But like I said, it's a hell of a band over there.
So the Jim is alive rumors, when those started, that was probably 80s? Is that kind of your recollection? What was your first kind of moment you became aware that conjecture in that?
R.I.P. Ray Manzarek, but he kind of pushed it. In fact, he wrote a fiction book called Poet in Exile or something. And then Rolling Stone had Jim on the cover, and it said, he's hot, he's sexy, and he's dead. Oh, okay. What was this, some kind of PR stunt? No, you know. Mm-hmm. Substance abuse clinics were not cool. They were around in the 50s, I think they started. But, you know, Eminem, Clapton, they hadn't come on board. And I even was like, gee, I don't know if I trust people who can't dabble. Well, I changed my tune, and I know a lot of people who can't dabble, and I love them, and I get it. I guess it's genetic. Fortunately, I can have a glass of wine now and then, you know? I need it! It's too crazy out there. I want the edge taken off. Thank you.
Well, I think everyone probably has something that can tip them unwillingly into activities they don't want. Like, I can have the occasional drink. I can have the occasional smoke. I can't have the occasional cigarette. Because if I have the occasional cigarette, I'll be out buying a pack the next day.
Yeah, I heard that. That's tougher than heroin, you know.
Mm.
Well,
I've been off cigarettes for 12 years, and I still dream of them. So, correct me if I'm wrong, but you had the last conversation with Jim from all the band members. Is that right?
Yeah, that's correct.
Okay. Did you get the impression that he was kind of cleaning up, that he was kind of getting clear?
No, I was trying to tell if he was a little looped. And, you know, in France, they have wine for breakfast. You know, I know he went there a la Hemingway and the writers to Paris. I get it. And Pam was hoping getting him out of Hollywood would kind of clean it up, and it didn't. So, but he was curious about how LA Woman was doing, and I said, man, it's doing so good. We're going to put out Riders on the Storm as the second single. And he was like, okay, great. You know, I'll be back eventually. And that was it.
Do you know if he heard the final album of LA Woman?
Man, that's a good question. He did not like mixing. He was not, the technical shit bugged him. You know, so, and Ray and I and Robbie knew that once it's cemented, it's not going to, well, now, of course, there's sampling and things change a lot, but we were very particular about it, and we liked it. It was fun, you know, to sonically, you know, who Playing for Change is? Playing for Change. Yeah, go to playingforchange.org. There are all these videos that the proceeds go to music schools around the world. There's maybe 40 of them. Ringo, Bono, Robbie Robertson, everybody's done it. And I was just mixing Riders on the Storm today for Playing for Change video, which, you know, it's going to take another year. The guy goes around the globe recording people. And so, but I love mixing. I hear the world. I don't see it.
Was that always the case? Because we've heard stories of some bands who stuck around for the mono mix, but didn't do the stereo mix.
Yeah.
Were you guys pretty active in both of those?
Ray and I and Robbie were there for every note, you know? And, you know, Rothschild was a wonderful producer, taught us how to make records. And then he got a little dictatorial. And we did LA Woman with Bruce Spotnick, our longtime engineer, co-produced. And that was very freeing. But we still, you know, were there for every note. But right. But Bruce said to us, you know, I mean, Paul would have me fucking do a drum sound for an hour, you know, perfection. And Bruce said in 20 minutes, you're done. You know how to make records now. Let's go. And let's just do a couple takes on everything, which was great. Mm-hmm. It was in our rehearsal room, you know, so we were really relaxed and having fun. You know, Jim was still drinking, but not in the studio. So he cared about that.
Yeah, in the book, it seems like the LA Woman sessions was the band kind of returning to form. Each album after the debut seemed to have gotten more complex, taken longer and longer, but LA Woman was kind of back to the roots. Is that fair?
And we wouldn't have gotten back to Morrison Hotel and LA Woman, which are sort of blues-based, if we hadn't experimented. Like, Ray and I talked about, you know, jazz and having some horns and crazy stuff. And that's what we did on, what was it, Soft Parade. We had to go through that. We were trying to make Sgt. Pepper, you know. Right. And then that got us back to our garage roots, which, you know, is the beginning. And we were the first punk band.
Yeah. That's interesting. So do you have a kinship with punk? Do you feel a kinship with punk music?
I didn't at first. Ray did. Ray was produced X. And what did he call it? The buzzsaw guitar sound or something. Mm-hmm. You know, the distortion. And it took me a while to get into that. And I thought they had no musicianship. And then I don't mean X. They do. But, you know, the punk in general, some of those groups, the musicianship was low, but that wasn't the point. They were shoring up the how should I put it, the hippies who, you know, I mean, the 60s really were 65 to 7. That's when it was still kind of pure. And then it got into cocaine and, you know, we were street scientists messing around with legal LSD and smoking pot, which was introspective kind of. Cocaine, heroin, come on. Even Jim said, man, that's some dangerous shit.
Yeah.
I think I'll take the legal drug, alcohol.
Yeah. I mean, do you know if he dabbled in the hard stuff at all?
Rumors have it that he did in Paris. I don't know.
Mm.
Yeah.
Okay. But stateside, you weren't aware of him kind of going that far.
Well, cocaine, we all tried it. And I want to go the other way. I want to chill and have herb and a drink. You know, I'm already hyper. I don't, what's the deal? Yeah, my tongue feels weird. Is that it? Other people said, oh, they felt like they could conquer the universe. Of course, every 20 minutes they needed more, you know.
Good. So back to the era. So not much of L.A. Woman was ever played live. Were there a few shows where some of the material was premiered?
Yeah, that's a good question because we played in Dallas and we played Riders on the Storm for the first time live. And went pretty well. And I think we thought, hey, maybe we got a new thing here, jazz rock or whatever. Well, the next night in New Orleans, Jim was so drunk. He sat down on the drum riser in the middle of the show and wouldn't get up. Mm-hmm. And I had lobbying Ray and Robbie to get off the fucking road for a year just to back off because we, you know, we had control in the studio. If he was too loaded, we go home. And we were really good live. And I hated seeing that eroded, you know, and it got eroded, you know, from his substance abuse. And it's really sad for me. So, yeah, so much for the jazz rock, a new live direction.
Well, that was when Paul Rothchild tapped out after he heard Riders on the Storm.
Well, yeah, and he didn't get the vision of that. He said it was cocktail music or something. But he taught us how to make records, and he was great. He was very strong. Mm-hmm. And you know, we knew what we were doing eventually. Enough. We did, I don't know, fucking 100 takes on Unknown Soldier. That was enough. Enough, Paul.
Now, there seems to be a pretty steady stream of Doors live material coming out.
Yeah.
We've also spoke to people from the Experience Hendrix team who kind of do something very similar. They've got a vault full of tapes, and uh-huh. every year or so they focus on one, clean it up, and they make it available. Is there a lot left in the Doors vault, do you know?
Blue Hair, I thought we scraped the walls of the vaults years ago, and they're still, I don't know, finding stuff or shows somewhere. And I was very against it, you know, at many years ago, like outtakes means we don't want it out. Mm-hmm. And then, you know, I have a Coltrane album with 6 cuts of the same tune leading to the master. And being a fanatic, I like it. So then I went, okay, if the hardcore fans want to see our entrails, okay, I don't know. But, you know, George Harrison did state that if any more Beatles shit came out, they'd have to put the Surgeon General's warning on the side. So, food for thought.
Is there a live recording or performance that we could hear today that you feel is best represents the Doors at their peak, at least in your mind?
I don't fucking know. Alive, She Cried, I guess. I think our best live performance with video was the Roundhouse in London. Mm. It was, we were young. It was in black and white. We had a lot of fire, and some of the Beatles were in the audience. That for me, is the best live thing.
Mm-hmm.
You know, the Hollywood Bowl is visually beautiful, but Jim was kind of spaced out on acid. Thanks a lot.
Yeah, he didn't let anyone know. You found out afterwards, is that right?
Yeah, yeah. How he managed to get through, I don't know. But he did get obsessed with a moth on the stage, you know. A little moth flickering around. Jim, hello, Jim.
Now, the New Orleans show, that was the final Doors show. Is that right?
Yeah. Okay. Yeah.
And I understand there's a recording of that, but of very poor quality. Have you heard that?
No.
Okay.
So I walk around and sit down next to him in the middle of the show. Everybody's waiting. I said, Jim, what would you like to play next? He's just sitting there. And then he tells some stupid story. And then that's it. Then we, Ray and Robbie walk off and we know it's done.
Yeah. He was trying to tell jokes apparently at one point.
Yeah. Oh, not very good ones.
Okay. Well, apparently there is a recording of that. I think Bruce Botnick mentioned it. And
really?
Yeah. Wow. But I think it was him.
I shouldn't bring this up, but I have. There's an absolutely horrible recording of him drunk out of his mind with Hendrix at the Scene in New York, a club where he goes up on stage and just ruins everything. But, you know, he did that.
So there is a recording of that. You've heard that, yeah?
Oh, shit. Don't find it, okay? It's awful. He's just swearing and saying stupid, sexy shit.
Right. Was that the one where Janis Joplin was there as well?
I don't know of any recording with her. I know the two of them were together partying to the point of oblivion.
Now, in your...
I'll be 80 this year, okay? Mm-hmm. I like being an example of other roads for young people. Mm-hmm. You don't have to just wear leather pants and start drinking. That won't do it. So just, you know, there's different ways.
Sure, sure.
Yeah.
And it seems like you've had a very rich artistic life. You know, the Doors were a great kickoff. But
had? What do you mean had?
Well, okay.
I told you I was mixing this morning. And also, you know what I'm doing? I have so many projects. It's crazy. I'm doing an album with Chuck D from Public Enemy.
Wow. Okay.
He called me and said, Chuck D plus John D equals dope. Let's make dope. You got the rhymes. You got the beats. I got the rhymes. And we're into it. I don't know what it is. Alt hip hop or something.
Wow.
And I'm also going to do a quick album in a couple days of just mainly improvising with Adam Holzman, who's Jack Holzman's son, who signed us to Elektra Records. And Adam played with Miles fucking Davis. That's how good he is. And Ray was his idol. But man, so he came over to my house a year ago, and I have a baby grand in the living room, and I had my drum set, and we jammed, and oh, we had so much fun. We're going to go do it for a couple days and record.
Phenomenal. Yeah.
Yep.
I'm interested in this Chuck D project. Have you already done the recordings on that?
Well, we've done contract? 2/3. I hope the fall of this year that comes out.
Wow. And yeah. What other musicians? Just you and Chuck? I'm assuming there's...
Primarily.
Okay.
Yeah.
Okay. So... You have continued to have a rich artistic life.
Thank you.
After the Doors. When the Doors were originally starting, and I don't even know if you recall the Doors yet, there was that original acetate record that was made that was brought around to different record labels. Yeah.
Correct. Yeah.
Do you know how many of those acetates were made? There seems to have been a few that were out there and available.
I think there was about 6. Give or take. Robbie was not in the band yet. It was Ray and his two brothers, one playing harp, one playing guitar, and me and was there a girl bass player on that? We had a girl bass player for a minute. Ahead of its time.
Yeah.
Moonlight Drive was on there. It's pretty amateurish, but we had no idea how to make records or anything.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that was an early acetate. Is that what got us signed to Columbia? I don't know. But then Columbia dropped us. I went into the Billy James was the Elektra West Coast PR guy, and he went to the bathroom, and I looked on his desk, and I saw the Columbia pickup and drop list, and we were on the drop list. And that night at the club we were playing, I told everybody, and everybody was like, "Oh, fuck." And I went, "No, it's a good thing," and you know, trying to be optimistic. And so Elektra, you know, everybody came to the whiskey, Light My Fire is a hit, blah, blah, blah. But Elektra Records was the only one who stepped up with $5,000 and three albums. And we were excited to be on a little boutique label with Paul Butterfield and Judy Collins. You know, it was pretty hip. And so off we went. And Love, they were wonderful.
Columbia, you were, and it was the Doors, I guess.
It was.
Okay.
And to this day, they're still searching their vaults. Didn't we record something?
So nothing was recorded in your time at Columbia. Nothing. Okay. And that acetate, did each of the band members have one, or did management get the six of them? Because one of them came on the market. A lot of what we talk about here are records and collectibles and things like that. And one of the acetates came on the market, I think, in 2011. And then there was one, I think, that was part of it was used as a source for a Doors box set, I think, in the late 90s.
Okay.
Do you remember much about those acetates?
I just remember there was six of them, and I didn't have, we all had one, and we took them to record companies and stuff.
So with the rights of the Doors, and in the book, you know, you fought quite valiantly for the legacy of the music to stay within the agreement that the four of you originally made.
Yeah.
What arrangements have you been able to make for what happens beyond, once you join that phenomenal band in heaven? What's going to happen with the music?
We'll be back after these messages.
Well, hey there, record collectors. There's a new service available that specializes in record cleaning, restoring, sticker removal, and professional grading.
VMGVinyl.com.
VMG Vinyl can help you make the most of your collectible records. From professional cleaning of records and sleeves,
removing old price tags and store stickers,
dry cleaning and rejuvenation of old shrink wrap to make it look like new, even providing you a professional play-tested third-party grade with either removable grading or encasing in plastic, you have a wide range of choices at VMGVinyl.com.
Buying a highly collectible record and you want it checked out by an expert?
VMG Vinyl can do that too. Head over there now and see what VMGVinyl.com can do for you and your collection. That's VMGVinyl.com, the one-stop shop for professional third-party grading, cleaning, and record restoration. That's VMGVinyl.com.
Oh, and hey, record nerds, don't forget to clean your records with the very best and safest record cleaner, the Groove Washer. Make your records look and sound their very best and store them with confidence using the new Groove Washer Groove Guard record sleeves. You gotta try this out. It makes a huge difference to the quality of your vinyl experience. Ask for the Groove Washer by name at your local record store and accept no substitutes. Or head over to groovewasher.com and use discount code VINYLGUIDE. 10.
All hail the Groove Washer.
That's groovewasher.com, discount code VINYLGUIDE10.
Now we return to the program, already in progress.
No limits. With the rights of the Doors, and in the book, you fought quite valiantly for the legacy of the music to stay within the agreement that the four of you originally made.
Yeah.
What arrangements have you been able to make for what happens beyond, once you join that phenomenal band in heaven? What's going to happen with the music?
My kids are very clear on my wishes, which are what Jim's wishes are. It's complicated. I mean, I wrote an afterword in The Doors Unhinged, where I think I started it Newsflash, Robbie Krieger and Jim's estate sold their quarter, you know. And so I'm now in bed with a corporation, but I still have veto power. Mm-hmm. Oh, it's complicated. I mean, what can I say? When Springsteen and Dylan started selling their stuff for like hundreds of millions, I said, Robbie, listen, let's show these rockers how to do it. Let's sell everything with restrictions, of course, of no commercials, and just give all the fucking money or half of it to charity. That'll wake up people. And he went, cool, yeah, that's a good idea. And then 2 months later, he sold his quarter with no restrictions. I said, Robbie, what's up? Is this like a Key and Peele comedy skit where I'm worried about Jim's legacy, and you're thinking, wow, my pockets are getting deeper. Okay. So I don't know. And then if you want to get real paranoid, which, you know, it's a corporate world. These big corporations, I got to really trust if I sold it with restrictions, because, you know, the bigger ones might do a commercial and then say to my kids, sue me.
Yeah.
You know, they got millions of dollars. They don't give a shit. They got, and as you read in the trial, they paper trailed me like just to run up the bills because they didn't have a case. We had a contract that said we all own the name. Hello. But, you know, the lawyers are in another world or something. And
yeah. Yeah.
And this, you know, well, Trump is a perfect example of, you know, you just bludgeon people with legalese and they drop out from exhaustion and finances.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
Hmm. Well, you set it up as best as you can because, you know. So after Jim's passing.
Thanks for throwing dirt on me. That's good.
After Jim's passing and before the 2002 trial, did you have much interaction with Jim's estate, with his folks or anything?
A little here and there. But one of the greatest things of all time, I mean, here I can't stop Ray and Robbie from using the name, and I'm really upset. You know, the Beatles are John, Paul, George, and Ringo. The Doors are Ray, Robbie, John, and Jim. It's not Fred and Tom. Mm-hmm. It's not the Police without Sting or the Stones without Mick. Stop. They wouldn't stop. So I do this. I mean, that's why my hair's white. I sue my bandmates. Holy fuck. I couldn't get Jim's spirit out of my head. I lost my train of thought. What the fuck was your question?
Did you have much interaction with Jim's estate
before? Thank you. I had never met Jim's dad. Jim wrote that his parents were deceased in his original bio. Whoa. And they weren't. Let's cut that umbilical cord really clear, because in the 60s, you know, anybody over 25 we hated because they lied to us about the Vietnam War. And his dad was an admiral in the Navy commanding a battleship in the Gulf of Tonkin. Holy shit. And we write unknown soldier. And here he comes down the hallway to join me in the trial. To preserve his son's legacy. I'm like astounded. I mean, it's like a healing of the 60s. His son's dead. I'm his son's age and peer. He's older. And, you know, I don't know. There was a healing. He said, it's a terrible circumstances, but great to meet you, John. Wow. Mm-hmm. You know. He was 90 years old, and he came to the courthouse. Terrific.
Yeah.
You know?
You wrote in the book where, and this is something I had no idea about, his father, the admiral, had a promotion, a military promotion thwarted because of Jim.
Yeah, he didn't express that. I don't know if he. Rear admiral. He wasn't a full. You have to have approval, and his son's antics kind of tainted his road.
any sense of the journey that they had to go through? Because that, from being completely written out of Jim's life and story, to the lyrics that Jim had that would raise anyone's eyebrows, to then be defending his honor.
Incredible arc. I mean, the guy who did John Sheinfeld, documentary film director, he did the U.S. versus John Lennon and a whole bunch of other movies. He's going out fishing with a documentary on this book. And I think that's a really important sub-story that, Jim writes that his parents are deceased. And they get all the way around to the arc of he's testifying, Admiral Morrison, saying how talented his son was. Oh, man. Wow. You know? That's an arc.
That is.
I think they sort of thought that him saying they're deceased in the first bio was to protect them.
Okay.
That's what they thought. Not happy with, how should I say it? Politicians are supposed to be elders. An elder is someone who cares about future generations, looks after the youth. And so I'll give you a line from one of my new hip-hop songs with Chuck D, where, you know, he sent me great raps and I put drums to them. And he's a busy guy. He narrated a documentary on PBS called Fight the Power, How Hip Hop Saved the World. It's real good. Mm-hmm. And so I was waiting, and then I wrote some words, some rap stuff. And I actually, how should I put it, spoke them. I have this terrible joke. Dylan can't sing, so I can. So, what's the line? Everybody gets older, but not everybody gets elder. The elder is the roof that shelters the youth. The road, I can't remember the lyrics, but it's sort of, you know. Mm-hmm. Anyway, so I don't know. We were kind of angry with the elders, all of them, because of the period. And it's, you know, the country is kind of polarized, you know, red states, blue states. And it was against Vietnam. So just polarization and hard to get out of that.
How do you compare today in the U.S. to in the late 60s in the U.S. when the band was coming together? Very similar in terms of the divisiveness?
Polarization is similar. The one lesson those supposed elders learned from Vietnam was not to show the bodies coming back in the next war or two. And then maybe we wouldn't have gone into Iraq and Afghanistan and all the rest of that shit. But
they got a lot better at PR, is what you're saying.
I will say that, as terrible as it seems, then it's kind of scary. This is pretty scary shit. Democracy on the block. But every night there was this horrible, horrible stuff on television. Napalmed kids. Oh, guys with Vietnamese with guns to their head. Oh, my God. It was just... And so our anger, well, we stopped the war. The protesters threw a monkey wrench in the whole thing. It took a lot of protests and many years and a lot of heads being beaten, but it's possible for the people to speak, which is probably what the Trumpsters are thinking when they go. But nonviolence is the key. Mm-hmm. Got to stick with that, or you're just doing what the enemy's doing. So,
the one thing, and
boy, am I on a soapbox. You asked me.
That's all right. No, yeah. Obviously, I wasn't around at the time. But the one thing that seems a big difference would be that back then there seemed to be a more unified version of the truth, and today there's multiple versions, and whatever side you're on is what you believe.
Yeah, pretty scary stuff. You know, I mean, if I remember Obama saying, he was asked questions about a few things, and they were ridiculous lies, and he said something like, "I don't even have a way to answer that question. It's so ridiculous and from Mars. What do you do with that?"
The view I had of the trial that you were in, the Doors trial, is primarily through the book Unhinged. At the time, did you get a lot of negative PR throughout the trial?
In the beginning, hardcore fans thought I was ruining the band. Mm-hmm. Eventually, they came around to, wait a minute, the Doors without Jim is not the Doors. And, you know, so, yeah, it was a little bumpy in the beginning.
It's actually kind of fortunate you had the Buick issue in the 60s, which set that precedent. If people aren't aware, I think that's where, when the four of you, when Jim was alive, the four of you were approached for a Buick commercial. Is that right?
That's right. And what pleases me greatly is that after the preface on the Doors Unhinged, my first sentence, the first two words of my book is "fuck you" from Jim saying to us, or Ray, "what are you doing? You just made a pact with the devil." God, did he flip out?
Yeah. if that incident didn't happen in 68 or whenever it was, 2002 would have been a lot harder.
Yeah, there you go. Right. It's bizarre. I mean, when Cadillac wanted Break On Through, it originally was 5 million. And I said, nope. All right, how about 10? Nope. How about 15? No, my knees are shaking, but no. And then I would say to Ray and Robbie, we all have a nice house and some groovy cars. What do you want to buy? And there's a pause. And that pause was the answer. Shouldn't do it, mm-hmm. in my opinion.
Is there any product or any circumstance or situation where you would consider approving Doors music to be made available commercially?
I've been brooding over electric cars for years. You know, maybe there's something that would help environmentally or something. I folded in England only. We let Riders on the Storm do a tire commercial. And then the ghost of Jim came around and I went, oh, fuck. And I gave all the money to charity. So that was the one time we it's hard being Mr. PC. Do you hear violins behind this monologue?
It is. No, I totally get it. Because reading the book, I'm like, put myself in this guy's situation. It's like, you know.
I mean, there's the Robin Hood thing. That's an interesting concept, mm-hmm. you know? And the bling thing. If you come from a culture that's been really oppressed, bling it. I get it. Have gold teeth and Cadillacs. I get it. You know, because you've been fucked. And so show them. Take everything you can. I, 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 we're just an odd little band where, since Jim couldn't play one chord, had no idea how to write a song, but had words and melodies, a cappella melodies. And he said, let's just do this all together, split all the money, split everything, and songs by the Doors, not lyrics by me, and veto power in case anyone gets weird. Oh, boy. Drum roll.
Well, another thing that kind of backs that up, and I'm not sure is fully addressed in the book, but the album cover of the debut featured Jim larger than the rest, which he was uncomfortable with, as I understand.
Yeah.
And then subsequent records, you guys were all pretty much equally...
uncomfortable with a little later. At first, I was like, why is his head so big? And then I thought, well, he's kind of handsome. I would sell copies of Soldier of Fortune. So, okay. But then by the second album, he said, I'm not on the cover. Let's get some circus freaks.
Yeah. You know? As a music fan, whenever I hear of a band reforming for a tour, band that had been disbanded for years and they're coming back, my first thought is generally, oh, someone needs the dough, right? And that's not an indictment. That's just, it's generally the case. And a lot of bands I like are much smaller than the Doors. So reforming to make a living is totally understandable. And, you know, I've seen bands that have reformed with three of the five members, and I'm happy to get something over nothing.
Yeah,
but
sure.
That wasn't the case for the Doors, or the Doors of the 21st century.
Well, there's that. And the 21st century was printed very small.
Now, I did notice.
Well, let me say something about Jim and money. This guy was amazing. I mean, we buy houses. He stays at a motel. He doesn't, you know, and he grows his beard and gains weight. He doesn't want to buy his own myth, but, you know, alcohol kind of caught him, obviously did. But after our first big giant concert riot where everybody went crazy, backstage he goes, okay, well, we've had our riot. Now let's go to an island and start over. Really? He was a different guy. He really cared about his words.
Yeah. So. Did he carry money with him? I mean, like, was he like, what was he like?
He didn't even have a wallet. He had like a couple pieces of cardboard and put his license and a credit card in there.
The bare necessities. Was there the desire, was there any sort of closure for the band after Jim immediately passed? You guys were already working on the next album.
Yeah. You know, here we are working and we love playing music. And, we don't want to give up the musical synchronicity we developed, which was really incredible. I mean, it was so intuitive. Me and Ray, God damn, his left hand was the bass player. Mm-hmm. You know, we fooled around with auditioning singers. Thank God we didn't try and get somebody to fill Jim's leather pants, because, you know, that's a big task there. And so Ray and Robbie tried to sing, and we avoided that, you know, that slot, trying to fill that slot. But after two albums, we kind of, oh, fuck. We lost our focal point. What are we doing? And we had three more albums with really good money, and we just passed on it. Mm-hmm. We had a five-album deal after Jim died. We did two.
Were there any names, any known names floated for who could potentially replace Jim?
Yeah, Joe Cocker. I don't know. Paul McCartney, he's a singer.
His name was floated, and we don't know.
I don't think it was. You know. The Bad Company guy.
Oh, Paul Rogers?
Yeah, great pipes. I don't know. That's all that comes to mind now.
Oh, okay. Did they actually try out?
Mm-mm.
No.
And
no recordings with other singers were made.
No. Sorry.
No, just curious. Yeah. Asking for history. The Doors music is so closely associated with Vietnam, like the end in Apocalypse Now.
Yeah.
Billy Joel even name checks it in Goodnight Saigon.
That's right.
Yeah.
Listen to your Doors tapes. And,
yeah.
Yeah, right.
Wow. In terms of that, is that something that you're comfortable with, uncomfortable with? What's your response?
Yeah, I'm okay with it. I'm friends with Ron Kovic, who was born on the 4th of July, right? Mm-hmm. And what a spirit. I mean, this guy's in a wheelchair, and he's 70, and he's still so fucking vibrant. It just thrills me to... He's like a teacher for me. And, you know, he bought the John Wayne myth back then and paid dearly. But, you know, you had three choices: Canada, jail, or Vietnam. That's it. Now, there's no draft. During Iraq or one of those later wars, I have a son, he's now 30, but I was thinking, this is a terrible thing to think, but they should start the draft again. That would stop this stupid, you know, my son might have to go, but it stopped this stupidity. I mean, you know, hey, it's easy to say with Ukraine, for example. I this is a real interesting story. I heard there was a woman in Kyiv sent me an email or something. She said, we're listening to Light My Fire and making Molotov cocktails. Music is a weapon. Thank you so much for the inspiration. I was like, wow. So I had the Doors logo made in the Ukraine colors. And we have t-shirts. All the charity went to Ukraine. But now it's dragged on so long, I'm getting nervous. You know.
I've got two boys, 14 and 17.
Yeah.
And not only with Ukraine, but with, you know, the other conflicts happening in the Middle East. I'm like, dude, you guys need to figure out some way that you're going to be able to potentially be of use without someone putting a gun in your hand. You know, you got to figure out how you're going to be able to navigate this. Cause I think that there's probably going to be a much larger escalation. I wouldn't put a draft out of reach in the next 5 years.
That's a beautiful line that you actually stole. You didn't know it. Gustavo Dudamel, the conductor of the LA Phil, genius, who's in the Seekers, he came up in El Sistema, a music program in Venezuela. The slogan for it was, if we get a musical instrument in the hand of these kids, they won't pick up a gun. Mm. And this is, I mean, hundreds of thousands of kids in Venezuela have gotten into music, even though the politics is, but yeah, exactly. I that's great that you said that to your kids. You got
well. It wasn't even it. Not even just musical instruments. It's like computer programming or some other function. That,
right. Whatever. Yeah.
Yeah.
Right.
Anyway, that's such a. I don't mean to end this whole thing on a down.
Really though, happy note, blue hair. okay. So let me say this. It's. I don't want to be in denial.
Mm-hmm.
And one has to be careful. You can't save people from drowning with holes in your boat. So don't get too, not you, but whoever, too overloaded with the troubles of the world. And they're ominous, clearly. But also, this moment, this hour, was really great, you know? And I don't want to lose that. Whereas, or if I have a nice meal or whatever, I want to be grateful. And so we can't forget that. And also, when things get really dire, there's a chance for something to get through that really flips things over. That's just that I got a yin and yang tattooed on my arms, my only tattoo. It, you know, life is kind of hard and great and hard and great. And so I'm praying that, you know, I mean, I have this theory now, I got a real political. If it wasn't for the 8 years of Bush, Obama wouldn't have snuck through. So okay. I know I sound like a real liberal, but I am. I'm just grateful he didn't get shot. And he wasn't as progressive as I wanted.
Yeah.
But, you know, there was a step there. And we're stepping back now. And maybe we'll step forward soon. Okay. End of sermon.
Well, to quote the great Mr. Rogers, whenever something bad happens, always look for the people who are helping, because they'll always be there.
That's what's his name?
Mr. Rogers.
Yeah.
You know Mr. Rogers? Yeah. 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 Look for the helpers. They will always be.
Did you see Tom Hanks?
No, I didn't. I didn't see that movie. No.
Oh, that's wonderful. I flipped it on thinking, you know, Mr. Rogers. And it was transformative. Check it out.
Okay.
Well, not only the performance, but wow, this guy, he had some healing shit, you know? as corny as he was in his sweaters and everything, there's a scene where he, maybe it's true, I think it's true, somebody in the family is dying and everybody's sitting around and Mr. Rogers comes in and he does this rap about, you know, our culture is pretty afraid of death. It's okay. We can talk about it here. It's like, wow. It's very wise stuff.
I
once again, thanks for throwing the dirt on me, you schmuck.
All right. Well, John, again, thank you very much for your time, mate. I want to make sure everyone knows about John's books, The Doors Unhinged, Riders on the Storm, and The Seekers, available wherever fine books are sold or stolen. And we look forward to hearing your project with Mr. Chuck D. I've been a huge Public Enemy fan since the 80s. I used to go see him in Oakland, much to the surprise and concern of my parents. But yeah, that sounds like an amazing project. So again, let's take some dirt off you. There's a lot of life and a lot of music and art left. So John, thanks for your time, mate.
And make sure I get a link to this interview. I want to spread it around.
Oh, absolutely. All right. I'll send it over to Daniel.
All right. Keep that hair blue.
I will, man. I don't have a choice.
Bye.
Take care. Cheers.
Yeah.
Oh, man. There we are. Mr. John Densmore. Huh, how cool is that guy? I mean, we knew he was going to be cool, but man, it's always great when they show up in there. That cool. John Densmore, latest book, The Doors Unhinged, of course. And by the way, there is an extended version of this interview only for our Patreon legends, patreon.com/vinylguide. Head up there now. Help support your buddy, Nate. Buy me a burrito or a beer or both and enjoy all the extras up there. patreon.com/vinylguide, peoples. And that's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Thank you so much for tuning in. Do me a favor. Please share these episodes on social media. That's always a huge help. Put them in the Facebook groups. Put it in Reddit forums. That's always a big help. Head up to Apple Podcasts or Spotify and leave us a good review. You know, 5 out of 5 star button is always helpful. And if you say something nice, that is hugely appreciated. We'll be back shortly with a brand new episode. So until we talk next time, get out there and buy some records, people. Cheers.
That's it for this episode of The Vinyl Guide. Follow The Vinyl Guide in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever podcast app you use and enjoy the full back catalog of episodes of The Vinyl Guide podcast. Thanks again for listening.